True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Crane Kenny gets us started here on the home opener. Crane, it's great to see you. The Cubs president of business operations. And really, you know, we do this every year, and it's so nice to see you and have this tradition with you that we have here.
Yeah, we're lucky. But I got to say, just listen to the bump on the way in. You guys have the best job in the world. Like,
it's not bad.
How much fun do you guys have? One, talking about sports all day with Mitch and a good crew and a bunch of colleagues that are a lot of fun. So I want your job. That's pretty cool.
We try to do a good job of having a fun job. That's kind of my mantra, my motto. I have to start with the fit, okay? Your opening day fit is supreme. You've got the businessman's tie with the vest, and then you've also got the kicks to go with it, the Fly the W Air Force Ones.
The suit, the sweater vest, we mixed texture here, the nice knot on the tie with blue and red. But the swag is really your ring and your shoes here. Mitch texted me right after we talked and said, check out Crane's shoes. Everybody wants the shoes.
Oh, Crane. My God. It's like a mullet, right? It's business on the top and fun on the bottom. Well, I said to you guys earlier, and you guys are absolutely helping me at home. My wife's out of town, which meant I had to dress myself today. And when I looked at the shoe options, I know she hates these shoes because she says, you're trying to be cool and you're not. You can't wear those. Those are for young people. So I said, you know what? She's not here. She can't police me. I'm wearing them anyway. So when you guys point that out, I hope she'll listen somewhere and give me some cred.
You are young. You do look fly. Everything is good. Yeah. Don't worry about what one person thinks. Think about all the compliments you've gotten already today. It's not even 11 o'clock in the morning.
So I know there's a really tough question coming because when somebody says something nice about me, I know right after that's going to be something really tough.
I do think we need to point out or describe the shoes. Are they Jays or are they Air Force Ones?
No, they're Air Force Ones in the Cub colors. The left shoe says Fly. The right shoe says W. They're fun. And Nike, a great partner. You're going to see a lot of baby blue Nikes running around because of our new light blue jerseys this year.
Let's get with the blue jerseys. Let's start with that.
Yeah, I'm
okay,
very
so I know it's the home opener. People have like the things they like to do for the first game at Wrigley Field. You guys, one of seven teams who have yet to play your home opener so far this season. But these baby blue jerseys, now I want one.
Yeah, so, you know, we discontinued the Wrigleyville jerseys. I can share with you, we have already sold more baby blue jerseys today than we sold all of the first year of the Wrigleyville jersey. So our marketing team, Jen Martindale and team, fabulous job. The baby blues come back. We were the first team in baseball to wear baby blue in 1941. We discontinued them in the 80s. And when we were looking at, so Nike gives you a three-year window to use an alternate jersey. So Wrigleyville was coming to the end of its life. We had to come up with something else. Great job by the team. let's bring the baby blues back. They did research with the help of our team historian, like what else was happening in 1941 when we originally wore the baby blues besides the war. And we stumbled into this really cool rabbit hole on what was happening in the blues era of music. So we all know that the blues migrated from the Delta of Mississippi. So Chicago's not the home of the blues, but the blues became electrified in the early 1940s when the sound was needed because of larger venues that Muddy Waters and other artists were playing. So Chicago is the home of the electric blues. So we said, you know, let's have fun with that. So you'll see on the blue jersey a guitar pick that says the word Chicago in it. References to the electric, because you'll see an electric bolt going through the word Cubs, and all sorts of other kind of hidden gems inside the baby blue jerseys, which is a lot of fun. And so far the fans are enjoying it, so that's what it's all about.
Well, I think that's a great point. It's kind of like your shoes, just having the little fly and the W on the back. Those are the details that people like. So what else can you tell us about the jersey that might be something that might resonate with people when they see it?
Well, for the, you know, and we got the players' input. So as you all remember, we had quite a issue last year with the jerseys when Nike brought out the Vapor.
Oh, we remember.
Oh, yeah. As I do. I remember, well, I should.
You couldn't help but see it. Let's
Nike's a wonderful partner, and I won't say anything else other than I walked into spring training last year. Danny Mueller, our fabulous clubhouse leader, said, hey, we got an issue. And he showed me the jersey, and I said, those are jerseys, right? He goes, no, these are the players' jerseys. And we brought Ian and Dansby and Jameson in, and it was pretty quickly apparent, like, these aren't going to work. So let's give credit where it's due. Nike immediately pivoted with the league and said, this is a mistake. The font is too small. The moisture wicking doesn't work, and a number of other things. And they quickly pivoted for this season. The jerseys are wonderful this year. So I'm going to give Nike all the credit in the world. Like, great job recognizing the problem and fixing it. And then the baby blues, you know, we got all sorts of fun little, the jock tags got special Sweet Home Chicago on it. And what's really cool, when you come to Gallagher Way now, you'll see a record store. We've never had a record store. So new and used vinyls being sold at something called Landmark Records.
Cool.
Right next to the Cubs store. And that's where you're going to find the baby blue jerseys. And when you walk in there, there's a music studio in the back, a blues player, I think today. I'm not sure. I can't remember who's playing in the back. All sorts of vinyl that you can buy, both new and used, and then our baby blue jerseys. So you're going to see lots of blues coming out of the ballpark this year, both at Gallagher Way, inside the ballpark, on our audio system and video boards, as we really celebrate, let's face it, Chicago and the blues and the baby blues kind of come together in one place at Wrigley Field.
I love that, and I love that it's all-encompassing. It's not just about baseball. It's about other things and how it's tied into baseball. So that's great. Now, once you get in the ballpark, every year you guys have a little something new. We've talked about the donuts, where you can squeeze, inject your strawberry or blueberry filling into that. What else is new at the ballpark this year?
So, you know, some simple fan amenities. We replaced all the seats upstairs so that the upper deck needed new chairs, quite honestly. It was one of the things left in the 1060 project. So 1060 started 14 years ago. It's over. We finished
it. That's it? That's the last thing?
It's the last thing on the main menu. There's new lighting outside, so you're going to see we're going to have a lot of fun with both lighting and celebrating the ballpark more, but also now it's colorized so that we can celebrate various holidays, right? Mother's Day will be pink. Halloween will be orange. We'll be able to like kind of light the ballpark in different ways. The Yeti Yard, which is our first kind of public-private space in the bleachers. You know, the bleachers are still my favorite place to watch a game. Tons of energy, a lot of excitement. But as you get, I'm 60-plus, we'll say. You get to a certain age, GA seating with no backs. And
it's a bad situation.
It's not great. So we now have a place where you can go, you can reserve your seat, and still have all the fun and energy of the bleachers, but not battle the bachelor party next to you that has gone amok.
Are cup snakes still allowed?
Cup snakes are allowed.
Okay.
Like, just to be clear, like, we had a tough, you know, the cup snakes phenomenon. We love fun. We like the bleachers should be a riot. On the other hand, you have a bunch of fans going, I can't see the game because people are like throwing cups. I'm getting doused with beer. And like, we want to protect the fans who want to watch a game and then let people still have fun. So last year we kind of designated a snake pit. Like, if you want to build snakes, you go here and snake your A off, right? You go do your thing. But for fans who don't want to be around snakes, you can go somewhere else. So we're kind of like trying to appease everyone. But the bleachers still, listen, I'm biased, although Sports Illustrated seems to agree with me. And I grew up in Boston going to Fenway my whole life, so I'm not just a homer. this ballpark is the greatest place in the world to watch baseball. And the bleachers inside the ballpark is the best part of the ballpark to watch a game. It is effing fun from morning to day to night, and it's Mardi Gras every day. And every time I walk through there, I see something going on that I'm either going, should that be happening? Maybe. But it's just, it's fun, and we're about to start again, which is just, you know, that's the real joy of today.
Well, as a guy who knows Fenway all that well from growing up, to see Wrigley Field jump up from 5 in last year's Sports Illustrated rankings, ballparks, to number 1, and you know this team, happy to see home, because number 29 on that list happens to be Sutter Health Field, where they just came, and they had a good time there. They swept the series with the Athletics, but now back home. How much pride does the organization take in a ranking like that, as arbitrary as it may be?
Yeah, listen, it's fickle. And, like, we kind of trade places with the Red Sox back and forth. It's special. It's, you know, you've heard me on this topic. It's just an incredible place. You know, I got this job 22 years ago. And when I got the job, I thought it was an honor and an opportunity. What I didn't realize, what it was an obligation. Like, you know, for a short while, they've entrusted this jewel, this cathedral, to a group of us to protect and try and improve. And when we got it, you know, we had concrete falling and all those other things. And so we've done our best. And to have someone say, like, it's the best place to watch baseball in the world, that feels pretty good. And all the credit belongs to David Cromwell, like Dan Kiermaier, the guy who runs the field itself. I was on the field today. That field was dirt 3 weeks ago. We played hockey throughout January on that field, as well as 2 football games, as a bunch of concerts. We played soccer there. We had golf there. Like, poor Dan Kiermaier, he used to manage a baseball field. Now he's got football, hockey, golf, soccer, concerts. And at the end of the day, he has to deliver that on opening day in pristine shape. And I was walking the field with him this morning. I'm like, man, I don't know how you do it. But 3 weeks ago, I'm out there, and it's all dirt. And I'm like, dude, you got this? And he goes, I got it. There's a few moments in your life where you're like, I know how I'm going to die. I'm going to be in the Spilotro pit in a field in Indiana when that field isn't ready on opening day. And so when I'm walking with him, he goes, I got this. I'm like, I sure hope you do. Sure enough, delivered in fine fashion.
I think one of the things I'm reminded of today specifically is what Jed Hoyer said when he talked about acquiring Kyle Tucker. And he said, what we want to sell him. And I feel the same about Ryan Pressly, too, even though I know he's got a little bit of experience. Neither one of them as home players. You know, to have that experience today is the what happens when you're that guy on this stage, knowing the multiplier that Wrigley Field is. This may be the biggest selling point to the both of them as to what this experience can be for them and how this season can really reward them. What are your thoughts when you think about what Jed had to say earlier in the year?
I believe that's true, and I hope that's really true with Kyle and Ryan as well. But, you know, I was in Tokyo with Dexter Fowler, our former center fielder, and who had played in a number of places. Yeah, and he went. He goes, we go. And it was really fun to hear him talk about all the places he had played in his career and what Wrigley meant to him. And he, you know, he played elsewhere after he was here. You know, he went to St. Louis. And he's like, there's absolutely nothing. And he was center field, right? So he got to enjoy the bleacher crowd. Like, there is nothing like playing a game at Wrigley Field. And he's like, dude, I am a Cub forever. And I hope Mr. Tucker feels the same way, because that would be really great to see him in right field for a long time.
How much does it help to build the anticipation, not only not starting maybe with the season opener, but to see the team doing well coming into the first at-home game of the season at Wrigley?
Yeah, we know we have the toughest month of baseball of any team all season, so we know April's really, really tough. To come in after a good road trip, you know, yeah, you know, could it have been one game better? Sure. But listen, you sweeping any club is hard. And our guys, this is our fourth home opener. We opened in Japan, we opened in Arizona, we opened in Sacramento, and now we'll open here. A lot of distractions, a lot of travel. No excuses, but it's a lot. And to come back, you know, with a winning record from that trip, really, really good. And the way we've been winning lately in particular, the bats are, you know, Seiya's such a gifted player. He's like, I think in my 20-plus years, maybe the most gifted, underrated player. Like, no one nationally really talks about Seiya, but when you look at the numbers and his OPS during his career with us, you're like, that's an elite player. that doesn't get a lot of love. I think Ian Happ, another one similar, like every year, incredibly steady, high performance, and not a lot of chatter. Obviously, King Tuck has already gotten the chatter because you go four straight games with a home run, people are going to talk about it.
Well, and it's nice to see that protection in the lineup really work together, as we saw, especially in the last series. We were talking to Cubs President of Business Operations, Crane Kinney, on The Score. And Crane, there's a lot of discussion about just either a progress check when it comes to where to find Marquee. Comcast is especially pivotal in this. You know, it's been in the news recently here. What can you tell us about where to watch and how when it comes to the cable distributors and just how to watch Marquee overall?
Yeah, so our agreement with Comcast expired in September. So we've been negotiating with them since then, and we've been operating on short-term extension since. Been very blessed that we've remained on the basic cable package. And so Marquee subscribers who have cable or satellite can watch us as they always have. The Marquee stream, for those who are cord cutters or cord nevers, it's up 50% over a year ago. So the streaming business continues to grow, and I think I might not be sitting here in a few years because I'm going to age out of this job, and you guys will still be here. But I think in 3, 4, 5 years, whoever's in my chair will tell you most of our audience is watching on the stream. That's where the business is going. But like as we sit here today, we have an unfinished Comcast agreement, which we're working really hard to get done. And then the streaming package is the way to go. I stare across the street at our friends at CHSN who don't have a Comcast deal, you know, and it kills me that you know, my friends are not on the predominant carrier and are going to lose the whole hockey and basketball season and now the beginning of the baseball season. But it's a reminder of how hard the environment is right now, because they have really great leadership. They've been trying really hard with Comcast to get their network launched, and they can't get there. And then you saw Comcast tiered their own networks in California. They tiered the Red Sox. They tiered the Pirates. So, you know, that's the direction life is heading.
And when you talk about tier, for those who may not know, it's just a higher level of subscriber tier.
Correct.
I also want to ask you this before we go. You mentioned that guitar pick on the shoulder of the baby blue jerseys. Understood that Eddie Vedder's probably already asked you about that guitar pick.
Yeah, so Ed was with us in Tokyo. And, you know, like, we're so lucky. Our fans travel for us. Bill Murray there, Jack White there. Ed shows up, and Ed always has picks with him to give fans. So if you kind of run into him and you're a fan, he's going to give you something. He's the most generous person, let alone rock star, right, that we know. And he loves the baby blue and the tie-in with music. So we'll get him some baby blue guitar picks, and hopefully he'll play them.
That's fantastic.
Sounds like a plan.
Great. And then one more question for you. From a texter, can I buy a record and bring it into the park? I'm interested in buying a few on Sunday.
That's a question I don't know the answer to. I don't think records are a prohibited item. I don't think they can hurt anyone. I guess you could throw them. I'm going to say yes on that. That if you buy a record, we're going to let you in the ballpark with it.
I know umbrellas are tricky. So,
umbrellas
are
tricky.
You never know.
Yeah, yeah. But the record store, check it out. We'll have live music in there. And I think it's just going to be a really fun place for people to hang.
I love that this is a new problem that you now have to address, because it's a great problem to have when you have records offered right outside the ballpark.
How about we break a few records inside, too? That'd be good.
That works. Crane Kinney and his awesome Nike Air Force Ones. President of Baseball, or Business, rather, Operations, joining us on The Score for opening day. Happy real opening day.
Yeah. Happy opening day. Thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime.
Thank you so much to Crane Kinney. And thanks to our crowd here at Sluggers.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more. And get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
I'm so excited to get to work with Caleb. Got to visit with him already for a couple hours, and I'm just really waiting for this relationship to blossom, because that's what it comes down to. He's got to trust me and I'm going to trust him, and this thing's going to work.
That was Ben Johnson on Fox Sports 1 in January. Ben Johnson spoke earlier this morning at the Breakers in Palm Beach for the NFL owners meetings. You've got Marshall Harris from Sacramento, Layla Rahimi with you on The Score, and we get back in to what Ben Johnson had to say about Caleb Williams. When we're trying to figure out what he means when he says strip it down to the studs, how does he tailor an offense to his quarterback? How do we get the most out of the talent that his quarterback has? He gave us some answers.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any undoing, but there are some things that we're going to encourage that he looks to do a little bit differently. So, he's been predominantly a shotgun quarterback for most of his high school and college career, and so he's very comfortable there. We're going to work to see the comfort level under center and how much of that applies. We had a lot of success where I was last, that going under center for the run game did translate in play action. Whether that works for us in Chicago, time will tell, right? But there's a lot of ways to skin a cat, and that's the beauty about this coaching staff, is we have a lot of different influences from a lot of different systems that we'll be able to bring together a good product.
How much do you think, with just having someone who speaks the quarterback language, how much can that benefit Caleb as he goes through this process, just even from like the construction of the room to the coaching staff around him?
Yeah, I think you need to be able to see the game as a play caller through the lens of the quarterback, and vice versa. He needs to see it through the play caller as well. Why are we calling certain plays with the intent of the play? But for me, everything that I do really is to try to set it up within how he sees the game. And so will the rest of the coaching staff as well. Some guys do have quarterback backgrounds, other guys don't. And so we'll take all those opinions into account and see what sticks.
When you're trying to see the game through Caleb's eyes and him through yours, in the very earliest stages when the doors open for you guys to spend more time together, what do you focus on first? What are the ways that you guys start to build that?
Man, you go back to the basics. And so it's the fundamentals of the quarterback position. What's our footwork going to look like under center from the shotgun? what are we calling the formations? What are we? What's the defensive identification going to look like? So that we're all speaking the same language. We got to get on the same page because it'll be a little bit different for him than what he experienced last year. And if we can mesh together and start speaking the same language, that's when things will really start to take off.
When you finish watching all of Caleb's film, he was open about the sack number, that he takes responsibility for some of those. What are things that you can do as an offensive coach with him and with everybody to like help bring that number down?
Yeah, it takes a village. I don't know what the number was in terms of seconds that he held onto the ball before releasing it, but we would certainly like to bring that number down. Part of that is how well can we scheme number one or number two in the progression open for him. The protection up front can get better. The route runners get to their spots faster. We can move the pocket a little bit more. There's a lot of things that we have at our disposal that can help with that process.
And if you have a young quarterback who kind of came up playing more shotgun, maybe is more comfortable in the shotgun, when you're trying to maybe do a little bit more under center with him, like what are the hurdles? What are the first things that Caleb's going to have to kind of get used to do that more?
Well, he's done it. He's done it. So it's just the comfort level. It's time on task. It's how many reps can we get under his belt to where he just feels better and better about taking drops under center. I'm more prone to the play action game underneath there because I do think the longer action, the longer fake does tend to hold the second level for a little bit longer. And that's where you get your chunks and your shots behind them. And so there is merit for looking to develop that part of his game. And the truth is, even if we do invest and we decide that's not the direction we want to go too far in, it's still really worthwhile for him to have that time on because it's going to translate to the shotgun as well.
Okay, so I love this from Ben Johnson. This is a perfect example of what I was talking about when I talked about how transparent he's been. The question he asked is he said he didn't know was how long Caleb Williams holds on to the football. It's 2.9 seconds, which was 13th in the NFL. That's considered a long time to hold on the football. And it's the fact that he explained the different ways, which we've kind of talked about going back to last year, in which he can figure this out and help Caleb be the best guy that he can be. That plus Caleb under center. How many times have we asked, why aren't they under center on a short yardage situation? Gives them opportunities to do different things with the football. I think that's what is going to get people all lathered up, thinking about this partnership and the fact that Ben Johnson's saying, hey, we need to speak the same language. We need to mesh together. The quicker we can do this, things can take off. And if you watch the Bears, that's all you want. It's for things to take off. And so Ben Johnson giving a perfectly insightful answer into how things can, in fact, take off rather quickly if they go about this the right way.
Yeah, for me, it's identifying the issue and understanding the solution and not being afraid to communicate that with everybody else. That's what you're seeing. Yes, we need our quarterback under center more. We need him to recognize what's going on pre-snap more, frankly. And the audibles and the checkdowns that you saw last season where the play clock is winding down to 2 seconds left, one, that is going to stress your play unnecessarily before it even happens. But we know that was a function of the offense that was given to him. And as Thomas Brown said, the offense that he inherited. But when you're talking about making the same things look different and different things look the same, being under center is key for that. If you telecommunicate what your play is going to be, because everybody knows what you do out of your shotgun sets and out of your center, under center sets, that is not going to work. Defense is going to read it, play's dead, you have to move on. When I consider what went on in the first drives of a lot of these games, I wonder about that as well. But yeah, I mean, Marshall, we all had the same frustration. It's fourth and short, and you're having to snap the ball 3 yards behind you. The person who handles the ball ultimately gets it 4 yards behind, and you're trying to get 1 yard. Make it make sense for me. That's why I love the tush push. So I feel you on what it comes to hearing the importance of being under center for him. And frankly, it's a quicker way to evaluate your quarterback. If Caleb Williams really is the player we all think he is, then being under center and being a traditional NFL quarterback more so in his second year shouldn't be an issue.
I think my favorite part about this is understanding that Ben Johnson doesn't just have a plan. He's willing to explain the plan in layman's terms that anyone, no matter how casual a football fan is, can understand from a year ago watching. I can't believe you brought up you almost gave me a little PTSD with the mention of the first drives. I almost forgotten about how opening drives went for the Bears offense last year until you just brought that up. And whoo,
terrible.
It took me back, and it wasn't to a good place, Layla. It was to a very miserable, I'm watching this, and I want something different to happen, but I know what's probably going to happen. And guess what? It just happened again.
It was three and out. I mean, in the time you took to explain it, I think the Bears' first drive began and ended, unfortunately. Yeah. So any change to that is going to be an absolute positive. But we are starting to hear some understanding functions of what a Ben Johnson offense looks like. And there are some similarities. It wasn't just him talking about being under center and how play action for him functions out of that formation. The slot receiver was also brought up, and how the slot is a productive receiver position in his offense. I thought that that was absolutely key because it tells you where he's using the reads on the field. Another piece that we want to get to is the ever-going theme about how many voices will be talking to Caleb throughout the season. So how will they structure that communication?
We're going to limit the number of people that are directly communicating to Caleb. I'm going to be a part of that food chain. So is Declan, and so is JT. The extent of which we're still working out, but we'll start on that process next week.
Okay, so he means Declan Doyle, his offensive coordinator, JT Barrett, the quarterback's coach. You didn't hear Press Taylor, the passing game coordinator's name mentioned in that. I'm okay with that for now, given that he has to restructure so much of this, Ben Johnson, for his quarterback.
Yeah, well, yeah, we remember what the passing game coordinator was doing last year, so that before he became the offensive coordinator and eventually the interim head coach. I think this makes sense. It's good that he defines that chain of command, if you will, when it comes to communicating with Caleb Williams. It makes sense because Declan is basically responsible for the offensive game plan, getting it to up to speed, while you have your head coach, Ben Johnson, doing head coaching things early in the week, right? So this all makes sense. And then JT Barrett, he actually was very good in describing what made JT Barrett be the quarterback's coach in terms of why he selected him out and brought him with him to Chicago. So that all makes sense. I'm really interested to see what role, if any, Press Taylor has. But yeah, it's the offseason, Layla, but even in the offseason, you can usually throw criticisms at people. I found very little to be critical about when it comes to what Ben Johnson is actually saying and what the message is that he's communicating when it's talking about Caleb Williams or, frankly, anything else.
Yeah, I think these answers are good. This is the honeymoon period for everybody with Ben Johnson, so I'm going to enjoy this. I'm going to enjoy having clear answers more so than what I've had in years. So I'm going to appreciate all of this while we have it and while we're trying to figure out what they're doing. And whether or not anybody realizes it, when you hear coaches talk about players in certain ways, you are getting an insight into how they're going to draft. You are getting an insight into how they view their needs on specific position groups. So all of these things are important to me and to us while we try to put this together. We don't know a ton until we see it. Minicamp is going to tell us a lot, especially with the benefits of having the new coach and the practice time you get. So I obviously will be watching that intently. But when you understand we're going to see perhaps more over the middle of the field, we're going to see a lot of yak and rack when he talks about the slot receiver being a function of this. When you hear play action being brought up so much, you're starting to see this really take shape. Misdirection, I assume, would be another function of this. When you put it all together, that's usually another piece that goes into all of the base formations. And motion, pre-snap motion, which we know was atrocious last season. So when you put it all together, I think that is it's just a major key as to how to figure out what you're going to be seeing on the field and how they need their talent to function.
Yeah, and I think the one thing that I'm taking away from this part of the conversation and his meeting with the media is that he's not fully evolved in what the exact plan is going to be in every situation, and he's transparent enough to say it without getting defensive, without acting like he's the smartest guy in the room. He's doing his job as a communicator
with the media, which leads me to believe that the communication in-house is also going to improve from a year ago.
Yeah, I always like to say it's not the National Talking League, but so I don't try to penalize coaches too much when they don't talk well. But when one will give you some answers and some insight, we listen and we build a case. And that's really what's happening here. And it's not a case against somebody. These are cases for people right now.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Almacid, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Almacid has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Almacid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almacid.com. That's Almased.com.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh my goodness, Kobe White, Heat and Rim here in Orlando. Oh my goodness, the Magic Kingdom will never be the same.
Kobe White, Eastern Conference Player of the Week.
Kobe White drives it into Wagner.
Oh, nice hesitation.
A season high, an official career high, tying 37 points. Kobe White, good!
That's us, Kobe White.
A new career high, 42.
Ooh, Kobe White is on fire.
Coming in hot, Kobe White, back-to-back Eastern Conference Player of the Week. That hasn't happened since Michael Jordan.
Kobe over the midcourt line, 4 seconds to go. Kobe comes up shooting on Westbrook, deep three, bam! Oh my goodness, Kobe White, big time onions.
We're hearing Kobe White chants from the fans that have made the trip over to Ball Arena. The Bulls fans are chanting Kobe White's name.
This is the Kobe White show. This franchise now belongs to Kobe White.
2-point game, 9.8 left.
And Bulls guard Kobe White was named the Kia NBA Player of the Month in the East for games played in March. White joins Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Derrick Rose, Jimmy Butler, and DeMar DeRozan as the only players to earn that monthly honor.
DeMar was a guy that gave the group great belief that we could win. And I think Kobe's done the same thing.
I love it. I mean, it's exciting to see. Always tease him. You know, I told him the other day, congrats. You know, just rooting for him.
From North Carolina, a 6'5 guard, number 0.
It is Kobe White joining us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Kobe, that was a heck of a montage. Those moments that stand out to you, what can you say about the streak that you've been on to be able to earn Eastern Conference Player of the Month? Congratulations.
Thank you. I just, you know, I can always say I'm super blessed and fortunate to be in the situation. I'll try not to take, you know, these moments for granted. Like I say, I give a lot of credit to my teammates, to the coaching staff, continue to push me to be better on and off the court each and every day. For, you know, Billy Coach to continue to help me grow as a leader and continue to strive to be the player that I want to become. So, like I said, I give all the thanks to my Lord and Savior. I continue to give him all the glory without him, none of this is possible. So I'm just super grateful and thankful, you know, for me to be in the situation that I'm in this moment.
Kobe, take me back to the beginning of this year, maybe as a reflection on last year and the growth that you showed when you were right there in the running for most improved player in the NBA. I'm just curious, is this something that you envisioned the way you've played in the second half of the season once Zach departed? And, you know, it was squarely on your shoulders, not the first time Zach's been out and you've had to pick up your game and take it to another level. But did you envision this much success in the back half of the season?
I wouldn't say I envisioned this much because for the most part, I always tell people, I kind of take, you know, this season is so long, it's so many games. I take it one day at a time. I don't like kind of look towards the future or anything like that. I try to be in the moment and, what does my team need right now? What do I have to do in order to help my team succeed? And I kind of, you know, like a lot of opportunity opened up, just to be honest, when Zach left, just because of the type of player he was. So there was a lot of responsibility on all of us to take our games to another level. And I think you've seen it not only with me, but with everybody else on the team, with especially, you know, with Josh, adding additions, you know, Trey Herder, mm-hmm. and, you know, DT's been playing really well. Zach Collins came. He's been playing extremely well. So I wouldn't say it's all been on me. You know, I think a lot of us have all stepped up in a new role, and I think we're seeing to take advantage of it, each and every one of us individually.
Yeah, you can definitely tell, Kobe. And one of the things that I always appreciate about you, you know, is even when I've talked to you on the court after the games, you're always kind of surprised by your stats sometimes. I do feel like you take things pretty much individual play by individual play. But it's that level of focus that I think has really gotten you to this point. What would you say about just how much you're focusing on what you know your shot profile is, what you know your shots can be, even the level of focus it took, you know, from that steal from Giddey to kick it out to you to be able to stay in that game against the Lakers?
Yeah, I think coach is always hard on getting lost in the game, getting lost in the moment, and just play free. Oh, wow, Derrick Rose just walked in the practice facility.
Breaking news.
Yeah, this is crazy. But I think just taking it one play at a time, taking it one possession at a time, and, you know, never getting too high, never getting too low, just being even. I think that level of detail is something I've carried over, you know, from even off the court, is how I live my life, just being one moment at a time, taking it one day at a time. So for me, that's kind of how I've been looking at it. And that's kind of how this season I wanted to come in and focus on, you know, taking it one play at a time. Don't worry about missing and making shots. Don't worry about turning up. Like, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to miss shots. You're going to, you know, do stuff that you're going to look back on and say, like, that wasn't smart. But for me, I think just getting lost in the game, but also just taking it one play at a time and then leaving the pass in the past. So if I turn it over, if I do miss a shot, you know, obviously try not to turn it over again, but that play is over with. Like, that possession is over with. So continue to move on from it and then just get lost in the game.
I noticed, like, your body language has changed. You talked about playing free, and I remember when you hit the shot at the end of the half the other night, and you're hopping on one leg, and I was like, oh, this game's over. Kobe's got this. It's all good. What's your confidence level like right now on a night-to-night basis? I know you had a rough night, as did the team the other night against Oklahoma City, arguably the best team in the league, but you bounced back nicely with the win of Toronto. I just want to know what your confidence level is like right now, and has it ever been this high since you've been a basketball player?
Yeah, I think my confidence level is at a really good level right now. I think for me, it's just what has helped me a lot. Like, I always give my teammates the credit, but like, just the feel, the vibe we have with the team, our level of connectedness has really, like, you know, helped me. It's kind of, you know, reminded me of, like, early on days of playing basketball with, like, in, like, high school and in college, that type of atmosphere with the guys. And like I said, everybody's super close. And, like, we continue to instill confidence in each other, and that's the main thing. I think each and every one of us instill confidence in each other to go out there and be ourselves. And that has helped me a lot. Just, you know, everyone continue to push me. You know, guys on the team continue to talk to me at the games about, you know, I need to be more aggressive or I need to do this. And honestly, that's what really has helped me a lot. Like I said, like, I think when Trey came over here from San Antonio after the trade, I remember we had beat Toronto. It was a game we had beat Toronto where we had the comeback in the fourth quarter. And he texted me after the game and was kind of like, good game, good job tonight, but you need to shoot more. You need to be more aggressive. We need you to be more aggressive. And Taylen also told me the same thing like two games later. And I think, when your coaching staff and the people around you tell you need to be more aggressive, like, it's cool. But, like, whenever your peers and your teammates all give you that, like, leeway, like, we need you to be aggressive. We need you to, you know, hunt more shots. That kind of went a long way with me, and it kind of changed my mindset on, you know, the season and what my team needs from me. So those moments helped me a lot.
We are happy to be talking to Coby White, the Eastern Conference Player of the Month here on The Score. And Coby, I think that's great because you always struck me as somebody who's really self-aware. Like, you want to make sure everybody has opportunities. That's part of your personality. That's part of how you facilitate. So was that a big change for you to tell yourself, I need to be this guy more. I need to be more ball dominant or, like, shoot more when you're hearing guys like Trey say that to you, for example?
Yeah, because I think the mindset I had was more so like, you know, like you said, like, I'm trying to make sure everybody has the opportunity. Everybody has that equal opportunity. Everybody, you know, and things like that. So it was different for me at first. And then I knew I started to have to change my mindset whenever Zach left, but it was different for me at first. But those guys kind of helped me realize, like, all right, this is real, and this is how I need to transform my mental in order, you know, for us to continue to help, for me to help my team win games. So, and then after that it kind of flipped to my mentality to be more aggressive and, you know, hunt for more opportunities within the offense. And then that came with breaking down, like, sitting with our player development staff, sitting with Coach Dan Craig, and it came down to sitting like, all right, what are ways I can get myself easy baskets? Like, how can I get to the free throw line more? How can I get out and transition more? What, you know, how are other teams, you know, how have they been guarding in the past five games? What do I need to look for going against this team? Like, certain things like that. So it kind of broke down to where I could have more opportunities to get myself easy baskets and baskets to hunt more shots. So it's been good, though. You know what I'm saying? So,
Coby, I'm curious because it's that time of year. There's six games left. I want to know how closely you are following the standings and what the Miamis, the Orlandos, and the Hawks are doing. You've already clinched a play-in spot, but I know you've been in that play-in situation before. You want to get to the playoffs. How closely are you guys following not only what the teams around you are doing, but just how many games left and how reasonable it is that you can climb up the standings?
Yeah, you know, we pay attention to a little bit, obviously, just because, you know, it's that time of the year. And we obviously want to try to, you know, have the play-in game at home. But like I said, like, for me, I continue to try to take it one game at a time. I know Miami is on the six-game winning streak. They've been playing really good ball right now. And we have too, but we just got to continue to focus on us and continue to get better and take every opportunity we have, take fully advantage of it to get better and take steps in the right direction as a team. So,
one of the things that I really appreciated, Coby, was when you shared with Chuck Swirsky how your mentality was trying to go from good to great, and how when you're growing up and you're coming up, whether it's high school, AAU, college, that a lot of times you're not working on the fine-tuned points of your shot, for example. You're not working on the arc of it. You're not working on the mechanics because you're successful at that level already. I appreciate the mentality that you discussed with wanting to get better. What can you tell us about your mentality and your thought process when you decided you really wanted to work on some things with Peter Patton that I think helped you even get to this point right now where you get this accolade?
Yeah, I think just for me, in order for me, like, my whole life to get where I'm at, I've always just had to get better. Like, I always tell people, like, I'm pretty tall, but I wasn't gifted with, like, long arms or, like, you know, like, I tell people all the time, the people in the NBA, like, if you're, like, built average, like an average person, then like, it's kind of a knock against you. So, like, one of the things that coming out in the draft that, like, teams were worried about, that they was talking to me about, actually, I never heard it before. They kind of said, do you think the way you're built is going to have an impact on you defensively? Like, and I was like, what do you mean? And they was kind of like, you know, you don't have long arms. You don't have the highest vertical. You're not, you know what I'm saying? So, like, that's the first time I was like, oh, like, so this is real. Like, You know, so for me, it's like everything I've got in my life, I had to work for it. And so for me, any way that I can get better, I always try and find ways to get better. And I knew, especially working with Peter Patton, I knew him coming here, the reputation that he had, I knew that I wanted my shot to continue to get better and fine-tune my shot. And, you know, at first, like I always say, I'll tell people, he was very kind of reluctant of it because he was like, you already got a good shot. You already got a shot. I said, I know, but I want to get better. Like, I want to have a better shot. I want to reach a level that you know, higher than this. Like, I want to just continue to keep getting better. So after a while, he kind of started, you know, he heard what I said and he started working with me. So he's been great, man. He's been a big help in my career, not only this year, but last year, not only on the court, off the court. Like, he's a guy that I always can talk to. And that whole room, like, I give credit to, you know, Peter Patton, Peter Crawford, Austin Dufault, LD, like, those guys continue to help me each and every day get to where I want to get to. So
how does it feel when you were able to not just put it together and see your improvement last year, but see what you've just done when you know you put in that work?
Yeah, I mean, it feels great. Like I said, it's a blessing. It's a blessing. The one thing that I always tell people is, like, you can work your hardest and stuff still might not flip. You know, stuff still might not change for you. But you can't let that derail you from, you know, the next offseason of working hard. You can't go into the next offseason saying, well, you know, this didn't happen this year, so I ain't going to work as hard. You got to work twice as harder. So for me, it's just, it's a blessing because not everyone gets to see the work pay off. You know what I'm saying? Not everyone gets to see it pay off. So I don't take it for granted. And I'm fortunate, you know, to see it pay off. And, you know, I just got to continue to get better, continue to focus on getting better each and every day. So,
Kobe, you were averaging 18 points a game before the All-Star break. Now you're averaging 25 points a game after the All-Star break. Almost at the same time, simultaneously, we saw Josh Giddey go from averaging 12 points before the All-Star break. He's nearly averaging a triple-double, 21 points a game, 9.9 rebounds, 9.1 assists per game. What has that chemistry been like with him specifically, and how have you guys kind of evolved together here in the back half?
I think, like I always tell people, like, you know, he's a new guy, new to the team. I think for the most, kind of the first part of the season, he was trying to figure out his way, and he was very quiet. You know, he didn't want to, you could tell that he was timid. He didn't want to step on a lot of toes, you know, coming from Oklahoma City, and stuff like that. But I think, like I always tell people, that the more me and him connected off the court, it kind of helped on the court. Like I said, like, I met his mom, I met his family, he's met my brother. So, like, you know, the more that we've connected off the court, the better it's been on the court. And, like, the play that he's been playing with is phenomenal. I always tell him, like, for me personally, I think at some point in his career, he could definitely, like, lead the league in assists. And his IQ, his ability to pass the ball, I always tell him, like, he could get a triple-double every night. So he just does a lot of different stuff that impacts the game in terms of not only scoring, but, like, assists, rebounding, altering shots. Him being a legit, like, 6'8", can guard multiple positions on the court. So, you know, he helps our team out a lot in many different ways. And, you know, he's playing with a tremendous confidence right now. And, like I said, like, it's been awesome to see his growth over this year. And you got to love those type of stories that, you know, a lot of people count you out and then you prove them wrong. So for me, that's been the best part.
Also, what's your favorite moment of the season and why is it you dunking all over Victor Wembanyama?
Yes! Yes!
I wouldn't even say I think that was a good moment for me, but I think my favorite moment probably right now got to be that Lakers game. Because I think, like, after the game, I sat back and I realized that each and every one of us that was on that court played a part and hit a big shot. Like, Vooch hit a big three, then Kev hit a big three, then Pat hit a big three, then I hit a big three, then obviously Josh hit the half-court shot. So I think that was – and then, like, it's just always fun. Like, you know, even though – you know how games go, like – people think it's over, so you see people walking to the exits, they're leaving.
Uh-huh.
So we're looking in the crowd, people are leaving, and then, like, for us to, like, flip the script and each and every one of us have a big moment in that situation was dope for me. And I think that was my favorite part, just because everybody played a role in it.
Have you ever been part of something like that, like an ending like that?
No. No, I think I always tell people the closest thing was my rookie year in Charlotte when Zach hit 13 threes. That game was crazy, but like this game was nuts. Like I think like I said, the win probability was like 99.2% that we would lose the game. So for me, that was probably the craziest game I've ever been a part of.
You look like you blacked out on the dunk. That's why I asked it. That's why I asked it the way I did.
Oh, I did black out. Oh no, I definitely blacked out. Because after the game, I think I was talking to Pat, and I was like, man, like I'm looking at their video afterwards, and I'm yelling and stuff, and I'm like, I feel like I just got out of character, man. I ain't really like that. But
it's okay. We're okay with it. Everybody loved it.
I know we don't have much time left, but your rival is in the Final Four. Who are you rooting for? Do you have any interest?
Yeah, like I love basketball, so I've been keeping up with it, obviously. I'd be lying if I didn't fill out my bracket and say I didn't have Duke winning in one of them.
Wow. Okay.
I had Duke winning in one of them, and I had Florida winning in the other one. So I'd be lying if I didn't have Duke winning one of my brackets, for sure.
So it's you versus Billy is essentially what is happening here.
Yeah, Coach and then Trey. Hey, don't forget about Trey because he talks so much about Duke basketball.
Oh my goodness. I can only imagine what those conversations are like.
Yeah, he was on the phone. We was in the training room the other day, and me and Trey was in the training room because obviously he's rehabbing his foot right now, and I was getting treatment. And he turns the phone, and it's John Shire on the phone, and he's like, Kobe said, "What up?" And like, John, like obviously we're chopping up a little bit. I tell him congratulations, but it was just—he just like has a way of throwing stuff in your face. You know what I'm saying?
As most of us do when our teams are doing really well and someone else's team is doing very poorly. I get it.
Kobe, this has been so much fun. We can't say thanks enough for you joining us. And I know you got to get to D Rose, so tell D Rose we said thank you for letting us take the time with you.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Craig, why'd you change your jersey number?
I don't know if you're aware of this, but we traded for Kyle Tucker.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
That was just part of Lawrence Holmes's and Chris Ronji's interview with Craig Counsell. And I have a bone to pick now with Mark Grody. If you were listening to the afternoon show yesterday.
Wait, what's your bone to pick with Mark Grody?
We don't have time. I want to punch him in the face.
Punch him in the face? That's aggressive.
I'm not going to.
Oh.
He knows.
You know. What movie is that? Where they go back at the end and she punches him or kicks him? I think she kicks him in the man parts.
Whoa. No, I'm not that aggressive.
Okay.
I just said it and I actually don't intend on doing it. And you knew that when I said it, but still.
You know who's been getting kicked in the man parts? The Oakland Athletics.
Yeah.
They are going through it.
They are still. Well, they're Sacramento, but I did laugh at Craig Counsell being sassy yesterday. Like he had a little bit of snark to him. And I do love when Craig Counsell is sarcastic because I think he thinks a lot of what we say is ridiculous.
Are you saying he's part of the sassy man apocalypse I've heard so much about over the last couple of years?
Go on.
You don't know about the sassy man apocalypse?
I don't.
So apparently women everywhere are complaining that men have become more and more sassy and they feel like they're dating other women as opposed to men being men. And they're calling it the sassy man apocalypse.
What? No, I just think he's being sarcastic.
Okay, I like sarcasm.
Like, I think he's joking around. If that's sassy and you don't like that, I don't know what to tell you. I thought it was hilarious.
I can be a tad sarcastic because they say if you're sarcastic, that means you're really, really smart.
Yeah, so. I loved it. Like, I love when Craig Counsell points out how ridiculous we are as a sports talking society. I think it's great. So much so that we might have a segment that we're cooking up for you later. We'll get to that in a second. What happened last night in the Cubs game was a whole lot of scoring. And yes, I understand Justin Steele gave up a home run, blah, blah, blah. I don't care. Justin Steele will be fine. The wind was blowing out, to say the very least. Marshall, you were there. You know how bad that wind was. Ian Happ talked to us about it yesterday. Like, it was gale force winds. They said in batting practice again that it was very windy.
Apparently the gale force winds just follow me home because guess what? Here in Chicago, gale force winds. Hopefully that subsides between now and Friday when we're out at
Sluggers. It is how weather systems work. Also, they move from west to east typically. So you are correct in that.
That's far west, and I feel like we got the Rocky Mountains and some other stuff separating us from that particular system. We usually get it coming down from Canada or something. I don't know.
No, you're right about all these things. It's always, our weather is always, my friend in Philly asked me what the weather is because she knows she's going to get it in 2 days.
Like, okay,
whatever,
that's fair.
Whatever comes from here goes there. By the way, this Friday, join Marshall and me at Sluggers in Wrigleyville as we broadcast live from 10 to 12:45 before the home opener, the actual one on the north side. Zach Zaidman will then have the pregame show up until first pitch. Come out and join us this Friday starting at 10 a.m. It is all brought to you by Circa Sports Illinois Sports Betting, the way it should be.
I think first I just saw of lightning.
We just saw some lightning.
Yeah, I just want to let you know.
First of all, Seiya Suzuki hit an absolute bomb yesterday.
445 feet?
Straightaway center.
Like bomb.
Fantastic. I was upset with Seiya, I'm not going to lie. I was like, Seiya, you can't go 0 for 8 to start the season like that. I know you.
Were you upset because he leads the major leagues in strikeouts with 16? Is that why you're upset with him?
I was told that clearly I was being too hard on him. And part of the reason he leads Major League Baseball in strikeouts is because he's looking at too many pitches.
He's always been selective. I think he can't wait for the replay more than the average player because I think he knows his strike zone.
Guys, I have a confession to make. The reason I am not super peppy this morning is because I stayed up late to watch the post-game show.
Oh.
And Seiya Suzuki had some really important points that he made through his translator on the post-game show. So I thought I would share them with you. The quote is, "When I'm not doing well, I'm too selective. So I need to keep that approach of staying aggressive," to which I wrote in all caps, "Yes," 7 exclamation points. He nailed exactly what he needs to be doing. He's got to keep swinging. And it might look silly at times, but it's going to lower his strikeout number. It's going to increase his walk rate because pitchers will interpret him as a threat. And it's going to result in what we saw off of Luis Severino. That was absolutely great. Just straightaway center, absolute bomb, 445 feet. And also, 111.7 miles an hour off the bat.
If you like such numbers, yes.
Which I do. Like, give me all of the indications that that was an absolutely great home run.
I think the biggest thing for me, though, is just wondering exactly how everything was going to play out with one Kyle Tucker. And I came to a realization last night. He hits his fourth home run in 4 straight games. First time in his career he's ever homered in 4 straight games, right?
Which is interesting given his history.
Yes, he's a very good baseball player. He leads the major leagues in hits. He's tied for the major league lead in RBI. He's one off the pace in major league lead in home runs with 4, which have all happened in the last 4 days. And the Cubs now have a chance to have a great road trip. I mean, they've already had a winning road trip, but they can go 5-2 on this road trip and come back home, open up Wrigley with a winning record if they can get a win tonight. That's what's great, or tonight, this afternoon. I keep saying night because I look outside and it is pitch black outside.
Yeah, this is some darkness outside, man. This is the hard times of life. The Cubs go for a sweep this afternoon in Sacramento against the A's. Pre-game coverage begins at 2. We don't have transition with the afternoon show today. First pitch is at 2:35 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network.
But so watching Kyle Tucker doing what he's doing, and understanding that after 2 games in Japan, and it wasn't just that they played 2 games in Japan, and they lost 2 games to Japan, and they lost to the Dodgers, who, by the way, haven't lost to anyone this season. That's crazy, right?
162-0. Still a possibility.
So is the team behind them, the San Diego Padres. So
yeah, the Padres have... That's a discussion we need to have. The Padres start, and now they have some real veterans. And when I say veterans, I mean guys you didn't know were still playing on the team, and yet they're still doing well.
Watching Kyle Tucker the last few games, the last 4 games specifically, I've come to the realization that Cubs fans who know what it is, they know that they're not spending $500 million on Kyle Tucker when season comes to an end.
Over.
Need to treat this like the romance that it is. It's okay to be emotionally available and to be open to loving Kyle Tucker for one summer and one summer only. Have you ever had a summer fling? Because I have.
No.
I have. And it's glorious when you just say, this is what it is, this is what it ain't. And as long as you recognize what it ain't, from jump, one of the most transformative times of your life. especially when you're young.
Yeah, I run a business, both in my personal life and in my professional one. And I think I understand what Jed is doing here.
What's Jed doing?
When you made your face, I'll expand on that. I don't waste time on meaningless transactions.
But it's not meaningless because it's all about the experience. Because maybe, just maybe, Kyle Tucker can lead the Cubs to the playoffs and lead them on a postseason run. And I think accepting that that is a possibility will make this summer much more enjoyable than waiting until it ends. If you're only focused on the end, you didn't enjoy the journey. Let's enjoy this road trip with Kyle Tucker.
I actually think that Jed Hoyer did exactly what he could do.
Yeah.
He spent as much money as in capital, really. To me, it is money. When you consider the years of Cam Smith potentially in the league, it is money. So when you spend what you spend to get Kyle Tucker, I actually think he did the right thing because he's going to make you fall in love with him and hopefully want to spend that money. You know, here we are talking about what is it going to take to get an ownership like the Cubs, for example, to retain talent like that. And again, here we are talking earlier about the standards that we hold a team in the third biggest market in the country to do. Right? Like, we're talking about that with the Bears. Absolutely zero reason as to why we shouldn't hold that standard to the Cubs, and they set it for us when they won the World Series. And to have that confidence, knowing that you've got him in your lineup, knowing that if you see a pitch down and in, you know exactly what he's going to do with it. I can't remember the last time I felt that way about any Cubs hitter. And to see that and have that confidence, that had better show guys like Tom Ricketts something. That had better mean something to you outside of just your spreadsheets. That had better remind you that you were the Cubs chairman. Cubs.
Not spreadsheet,
competitive team. And you do what you can to convince that person that they need to spend the money to be that guy and to have that team.
So you think it's still possible to convince them to pay the going rate for a Kyle Tucker at the end of the season for what's going to be the biggest contract of his career?
Not just his career, one of the biggest potentially in Major League history.
No, that too. But I'm just saying, you're catching him at prime time. It's different when you have a guy that you can sign with the arbitration years plus to a big, huge deal. Who just got a big deal today? Somebody got a big deal this morning.
Padre extension, 9 years.
Jackson Merrill. It was like 9 for $182, I think.
Team friendly.
Team friendly, but also 9 years. You could do some things in 9 years.
And that's the point. It's just when you see an actual game changer on your team, the whole conversation is different. The whole way you feel about yourself if you're a teammate is different. Yosei Suzuki knows that if he strikes out, it's not going to be the end of the world if he's swinging and doing what he needs to do because there's somebody else in the lineup who he knows can also hit.
That's why he's also cool just getting on base.
but that's the point, is it allows everybody else to play truer to their game. Like, it truly is a team sport that way.
It is. I think with Kyle Tucker, though, and the question is, well, is he going to deliver? Remember, he had a slow spring. No one was worried. Not a single person was concerned about anything Kyle Tucker was doing. And now you see why. And I just think for our perspective, for fans' perspectives, let Kyle cook. And hopefully he can cook a gourmet meal that everyone can enjoy.
I'd go back to what happened with Alex Bregman and Theo Epstein being the person to convince Red Sox ownership, who, by the way, is evaluated at the same Forbes value as the Cubs, in the neighborhood of $4 billion. And Theo Epstein convinced them to spend that money on Alex Bregman. When I hear Jed Hoyer say and read, players need to outperform their expectations in order to make the playoffs, that guy doesn't. That guy's just got to be who he is. And well, you need those on your team.
Be who he is and also just not decline. Because he is, you know, 31 years old. We'll see what happens with Bregman. But I think the bigger point is, when Kyle Tucker doesn't come back next year, what's the plan to get that guy? And there's not a bunch of Kyle Tuckers running around, but to get somebody. That's why I was like, when Vlad was complaining about his deal in Toronto, like the offer that they made him, go get him. Trade whoever.
And look what happened. Now they're trying to make it work.
Listen,
He said they have their numbers and I have mine.
And his numbers were way closer to what he should be getting paid than their numbers were.
And he's a six WAR player.
Yeah.
That's the difference. That is the difference that person makes. And you don't really understand it fully until you see it on your team sometimes. And that's why it shouldn't just be a summer fling and you shouldn't just be happy about it that it happened.
No, I'm just saying.
I'm saying you'd better figure a way to lock it down.
I love that these are the angles we're coming at this particular discussion with, because clearly yours is on, if you think I'm so good, lock me down, because somebody else will, right?
In this case, absolutely 100%.
And I'll say, hey, you're too high maintenance for me. I'm gonna let you go with somebody else. I enjoyed our time together.
If you think adding to the win percentage like that is something that you want to let go, that's on you. I say that saying that's on the team.
I'm not saying I can't. What I'm saying is I'm not saying that I can't get Kyle Tucker and have the same winning percentage and win in the same manner with Kyle Tucker, but I can find somebody else there next offseason, next summer run. You know how it is?
And you know what Kyle Tucker's job is to say at that point?
What's that?
Bet you can't do it like me.
Go get it, baby.
Because that's exactly what we're seeing.
Listen, the Cubs have said Kyle Tucker's too high maintenance and there's enough people
they
out
traded
there.
For him.
I understand.
They put themselves in a bind for him.
For one season. Jed Hoyer, got to keep my job because we're not in save the job territory. We're in keep the job territory, right? Isn't that what we decided?
But I think he's also like, look what happens when I brought you this magic.
Maybe you should consider
holding on to it.
Maybe that will convince the people with the coffers to pay up. Maybe it won't, but maybe it will.
I'm stretching here for Jed Hoyer, but I just think if I were in his position, that's what I would be doing. If I'm in the last year of my career.
Come on.
But nothing was as enjoyable to me as the snarky Craig Counsell. Like, I still love it when he said, that's the news. That's the big news. I'm like, I'm sorry, Craig. This is Chicago. We talk about everything to the level of obsession. Like, please fire back
at us.
That's
probably the big news.
Like, I love that. Just please fire back at us with your ridiculous snark and your economy of words. Like, that's the best to me.
I can't wait to see what happens. I like that we're watching baseball that's aesthetically pleasing from both teams right now.
I like that we're watching meaningful baseball where something productive is happening and your pitcher doesn't have to be stressed out or even be talked about that much if he gave up a home run or two, which is going to happen to people who you expect to hit home runs, by the way. Like, those are two dudes on the A's where you know that something's going out of the ballpark. All of it made sense.
Just get out of there with a sweep and you don't have to go back for 2 years.
Now that's talking like a summer fling.